Thank you, Brother Bob. It's a privilege to bring up Brother Stephen Yike from Orlando. You know, here in Southern California, one of the things we worry about are earthquakes. Well, Brother Stephen is going to talk about just the opposite. His title is Building God's Unshakable Temple. Brother Stephen.
Thank you, Brother Peter and Brother Bob, for your prayer. I hadn't really thought about this subject in the context of earthquake country, so I hope we don't get any real tests of that this afternoon. It's a blessing and a privilege for Debbie and I to be here, and we've been looking forward to this for a long time, and it is great to be with you and to share your fellowship together and your love for us and for the Lord and His truth. And we want to bring with us the love of your brethren in Orlando. They especially wanted their love conveyed. Also our family, who are all back there, and especially my sister Janice and Ernie Kensley. They especially wanted their love conveyed. And I know if my mother was able to communicate in such a way, she would especially want her love, Sister Helen Yike. Brother Ernie Kensley asked me to remind you, brethren, that if you have not registered to go to General Convention, that he would like to hear from you soon, either by email or phone call. He is the registrar for the General Convention coming up in less than 2 months now. And so he asked me to make that announcement, and I'm carrying out that responsibility to you this afternoon. So we would love to see all of you there if that's possible. Building God's Unshakable Temple. Now we're going to approach this subject through the eyes of one of the prophets, Haggai. But we're not going to do it just through his eyes, because the apostle, and we're going to say the apostle Paul, and this is Brother Tim this morning talked about the book of Hebrews and the author of the book of Hebrews, and we're going to be referring later on to some portions of the 12th chapter of Hebrews, where the Apostle Paul, we believe, as the author, or whoever he perhaps had mentored in this way to author this book, refers back to Haggai. And definitely the Apostle Paul, in others of his epistles that we know were his, refers to this concept of the temple as applying to us, to the church. And so what we want to do, we want to start out with just reading a few verses from the New Testament. Three of them are from Paul, one actually the words of the risen Lord in Revelation. And we'll set that as sort of the basis for our remarks this afternoon. We're just going to read these, and then we're going to go back into the book of Haggai and kind of trace this subject through, and then eventually we're going to come back then to the book of Hebrews to see how it's kind of tied neatly together for us. 2 Corinthians 6:16 says, "Ye are the temple of the living God. As God hath said, I will dwell in them and walk in them. I will be their God, and they shall be my people." 1 Corinthians 3:16-17. "Know ye not that ye are the temple of God, and that the Spirit of God dwelleth in you? If any man defile the temple of God, him shall God destroy. For the temple of God is holy, which temple ye are." You know, in those two verses, the word temple is used four different times. Ephesians chapter 2, verses 19-22. Now therefore ye are no more strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints and of the household of God, and are built upon the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone, in whom all the building fitly framed together groweth unto an holy temple in the Lord, in whom ye also are builded together for an habitation of God through the Spirit. And the last verse that we want to start with, Revelation chapter 3, verse 12. Him that overcometh will I make a pillar in the temple of my God, and he shall go no more out. And I will write upon him the name of my God and the name of the city of my God, which is New Jerusalem, which cometh down out of heaven from my God, and I will write upon him my new name. Now, we could probably just take these four verses and draw some lessons and conclude our thoughts right here. In fact, we will right now just draw a few lessons from these verses. You know, these verses that we've just read, they tell us a number of things. First of all, they tell us that we individually are being developed as the temple of God, the dwelling place of God, using that metaphor of the temple. These verses also tell us that God is to dwell in us, symbolically speaking, through the Holy Spirit as his temple. These verses tell us additionally that we must not defile this temple, but must keep it holy. The fourth thing that these verses tell us is that we, along with other members who are also being developed, similarly, are being built together to be collectively a holy temple in the Lord, with Jesus and the apostles being the cornerstones and the foundation of that temple. And finally, these verses tell us that if we individually are faithful, we will be counted as a pillar in God's temple and part of the New Jerusalem, which will, symbolically speaking, come down out of heaven to bless mankind. Now, if we had to summarize the lesson in these verses, in these scriptures, it would be that our consecrated walk is that of being engaged in the process of building this spiritual temple, or to put it another way, the process of the development of our individual new creature life, so that we can be a part of that larger temple, the Christ, head and body, in his kingdom. You know, this is the commission right now of spiritual Israel, is to build this symbolic temple. Well, let's now sort of rewind the time clock, so to speak. You know, Israel, after the flesh, was also commissioned to build a temple. And we know, as was mentioned this morning, this was accomplished by Solomon. And it was a glorious building, a glorious temple. We know that later on, when Israel and Judah were taken into captivity into Babylon, that temple was destroyed. Well, 70 years later, after then Babylon had been conquered by Medo-Persia, Cyrus, the king of Persia, he gave a commission to those who were willing of the Israelites. He gave them a commission to go back and to rebuild the temple in Jerusalem. And we're not going to read the account. This is found in the book of Ezra, the first and second chapters. In the second chapter of Ezra, the account says that there was over 42,000 men which returned to Jerusalem for this work. And they were led by Zerubbabel, who was designated as the governor of these exiled Jews. He was also accompanied by a high priest named Jeshua, or sometimes he is referred to as Joshua. Obviously a different Joshua than in the days of Moses. And, you know, when they arrived at Jerusalem, the third chapter of Ezra says that they immediately rebuilt the altar of the Lord, and they kept the Feast of Tabernacles, and began offering the daily burnt offerings to God. And so they got off to a really good start. But in the sixth verse of Ezra 3, it says that the foundation of the temple was not yet laid. But then Ezra goes on in his account of the experience, and he indicates that that they soon engaged in the building of this foundation, and they completed the foundation of the temple probably about a year after they had received the commission from Cyrus and had returned to Jerusalem for this work. Well, we fast forward again. Or fast forward now. We backtrack now. We fast forward about 15 years later. And this is where we come to the prophecy or the words of Haggai. They hadn't done anything else. 15 years had passed. They rebuilt the altar. They kept the Feast of Tabernacles. They began offering daily burnt offerings. They built the foundation of the temple, but for some reason the work stopped. We pick up this in the first few verses of Haggai, and we're going to kind of paraphrase the words here. The word of the Lord came by Haggai to the prophet Zerubbabel and to Jeshua, the high priest. And the word of the Lord was that, you know, this people, these Israelites who have returned, they're saying to themselves, well, it's not yet time that this temple be rebuilt. You know, we first got to build our own houses. We got to take care of those things first. We know that because the Lord asks the question in the fourth verse. He says, is it time for you, O ye, you know, Israelites, is it time for you to dwell in your own sealed houses, your completed houses, and this house, my house, the temple, lie waste? He says you're busy building your own house, but you're neglecting the house of the Lord. And so in verse 5, he says, consider your ways. Verse 6, you've sown much, you bring in little. You're eating, but you don't have enough. You drink, but you're not filled. You wear clothes, but you're not warm. And then he says, he that earneth wages to put it into a bag full of holes. You're engaged in a lot of activity, but you're not reaping any of the rewards because your work is all for yourself. It's for the flesh. You're not doing any work for the Lord. He again says in verse 7, consider your ways. Go up to the mountain, bring wood, build the house, and I will take pleasure in it, and I will be glorified, saith the Lord. And he goes on in verses 9, 10, and 11 and continues these admonitions to the people to get back to work on the Lord's house. You know, I think already in looking at this historical account of Israel's experience here, we can see spiritual lessons for us. You know, and we should ask ourselves, are we building? Am I building temporal things, temporal houses, temporal edifices at the expense of a spiritual house, a spiritual life, a spiritual character? Consider our ways, God says. You know, am I busy? Are we busy in doing a lot of things, but is that being busy directed mostly toward temporal things? We must consider our ways. If we expect, as the Israelites expected to be blessed by God, if we expect to be blessed by God and to be pleasing to Him, our efforts should be bent primarily toward the building of the Lord's house, toward the building of the new creature in our life. That's the temple that we read about from those New Testament scriptures at the outset. And so we must, as the Israelites were admonished to do, we must consider our ways just as they were told to do. Well, evidently, through the prophet and through Zerubbabel and Jeshua the high priest, the Israelites did in some measure consider their ways. And verse 14 of the first chapter says that the Lord stirred up the spirit of Zerubbabel and the spirit of Joshua and the spirit of the people. And they came out and they did work in the house of the Lord of hosts, their God. You know, I like this phrase, the Lord stirred up. You know, we cannot be, just as the Israelites could not be, we cannot be forced. The Lord cannot force us to work in His vineyard or on our character or whatever spiritual focused work we are engaged in. He cannot force us to do this. We must be stirred up. And that's what the Lord had to do with natural Israel. And he does it with us at times. And He stirs us up through giving us various experiences. We must have a desire to build this spiritual house. Let's go over to chapter 2 now. They evidently did get this work completed. But then the prophet poses a question to them. And we're going to verse 3 now of chapter 2. And it's a sobering question that I think we can also relate to. He asks the Israelites, he says, okay, you know, you've now rebuilt this temple. He says, who is left among you that saw this house in her first glory? In other words, you know, you're looking at this new temple now. Now, do you remember the first one, the one that Solomon built? Do you have some recollection of it? You know, very few of them probably would have remembered it because this is, you know, 85, 86 years later. You know, the 70 years of captivity plus it's another 15, 16 years later. But that wasn't the point of the question. You know, how do you see this temple? And he sort of answers it. He says, is it not in your eyes in comparison of it as nothing? It was as if the Lord, he could read the hearts of some of these Israelites who, even though they had obediently built this temple, rebuilt this temple, they didn't think it was anything like Solomon's. You know, they wanted it to be grander. They wanted it to be more like Solomon's. Well, let's ask ourselves, as we examine our progress in building our spiritual temple, you know, how do we view the matter of our building? You know, how do we see the Lord's house today, now, 2015, compared, well, let's say, to the building of the Lord's house that was going on in the early church? You know, the work of Peter, Paul, John, and the other apostles. Are we viewing our building now as, you know, we can't do anything like what they were able to do? Why even try? Or what about comparing our building with the earlier years of the harvest, when there was seemingly just endless activity and numbers coming in to the body of Christ? Or perhaps even comparing our temple building now to the beginning of our own consecrated walk. Has the value of our temple building process diminished in our eyes? Are we weary of the passage of time, whether it's the passage of 2,000 years or whether it's the passage of 130 or 140 years or whether it's just the passage of time in our own consecrated walk? Well, it shouldn't be any of these things. Revelation chapter 2, verse 4 says, with a warning from the risen Lord, "Nevertheless, I have somewhat against thee, because thou hast left thy first love." Do we have that first love? Do we have that first zeal in building this spiritual temple? The Apostle Paul, again, we're saying the Apostle Paul in the book of Hebrews, chapter 10, verse 32 and verse 35, he says, "Call to remembrance those former days, in which, after ye were illuminated, ye endured a great fight of afflictions." Call to remembrance that, but not in a sense of remorse that now it's really nothing. No, he says, verse 35, "Cast not away therefore your confidence." Don't cast it away, because it has great recompense of reward. In the next verse, verse 4, Haggai, the Lord through the prophet Haggai, says, "Yet now be strong, O Zerubbabel. Be strong, O Joshua. Be strong, all ye people of the land, and work, for I am with you, saith the Lord of hosts." And don't we find that to be the case? You know, if we are strong spiritually, and none of us are very strong in our own, we're not strong in our own self, but strong in the Lord. And if we're willing to work, if we're willing to, you know, pick up our hands and work in some way for the Lord, He is with us. He guides us. He helps us. He directs us. He gives us the strength to carry on. But we have to have the mindset of working for Him. And again, the chief part of that work is the work, right, going on within our own character. Verse 5, "According to the word that I covenanted with you when ye came out of Egypt, so my spirit remaineth among you, fear ye not." Here it's as if he's reminding these Israelites of the covenant that he made with them way back when they came out of Egypt. He says, don't forget that. Don't forget how I guided you, how I led you. And he says, so my spirit remains among you. The same power, the same influence, the same help, the same strength that brought you out of the land of Egypt is still with you. That covenant that I made with you. And we have to remember that. We have to remember our covenant, the covenant that we made at the very beginning of our walk with our Heavenly Father. When we came out of Egypt, when we came out of the symbolic condition of sin and death, that covenant is still operative in our life. Well, at this point in the narrative of Haggai's prophecy, you know, he's been giving admonition and he's been giving encouragement. And all of a sudden in verse 6, he puts a different hat on. He puts his prophet hat on And he is seemingly, he changes gears completely. Now, one of the things we hope to do as we go through this is try to kind of tie it together a little bit. And all of a sudden he starts talking about what I think most of us feel is a prophecy of our day today. He says, "For thus saith the Lord of hosts, yet once, it is a little while, and I will shake the heavens and the earth and the sea and the dry land, and I will shake all nations, and the desire of all nations shall come, and I will fill this house with glory, saith the Lord of hosts." Now, what in the world does that have to do, that prophecy, which really has to do with our day, what's the connection between that and the encouragement and the admonition that he was giving to the Israelites just really the verse before in the preceding chapter? Well, I think this is where there's a special lesson for us. You know, the tie-in to the context of verses 6 and 7 is in the fact that we are being built now as a spiritual temple, right in the midst of a shaking process that's going on in the earth. We're living this right now. In the middle of the shaking process that's going on, a tearing down process, a time of trouble, the final building and completion of the spiritual temple is taking place right now in you and in me. And so there are important things that we should take from this as we complete our part of this work, and that is the building of this spiritual temple. And we've already talked about some of that, the encouragement and the admonition that he gave to natural Israel is really for our benefit as spiritual Israelites now. And we notice that in verses 6 and 7, it's not our responsibility to really get focused too much on the shaking and so forth, because he says, "I will shake the heavens and the earth, the sea, the dry land. I will shake all nations." He says, you're supposed to be working on the temple. I'll take care of the shaking. And we all, you know, we could spend a lot of time talking about, you know, the heavens, the earth, the sea, and the dry land. And those are, I think, various aspects of the old order of things that are part of the shaking process that are going on, whether we consider it, you know, religious, political, social, economic, whatever terms you might want to apply to it, they're all being shaken and will continue to be shaken. And this is where now we go to the book of Hebrews, because the Apostle Paul, in Hebrews, the 12th chapter, picks up on the prophecy of Haggai. But he kind of subtly gets into it. You know, a lot of the 12th chapter of, and Brother Tim talked about the 12th chapter of Hebrews. And when you get down to around verse 18 through 29 or so, he goes back and talks about the days of Moses and when that covenant was established with Israel, and it was a very violent scene. The mountain was burning with fire, and there was darkness, and there was tempest, and the people were afraid, and Moses was afraid. And yet this was the experience God used to show his power to the Israelites that, you know, I am establishing my covenant with you. And so I want you to remember this. And I'm sure they remembered. In verse 22 of Hebrews 12, he begins then to make a contrast. He says, "But you now you're not going to that mountain that was shaking and that was black and it was dark and burned with fire. As you've come or are coming to Mount Zion, to the city of the living God, to the heavenly Jerusalem. And then he goes on and talks about a number of other associated things with this new arrangement. And then in verse 26 is where he then goes back and refers to the prophecy of Haggai. He says, God's voice then shook the earth. Again, going back to the days of Moses and the establishing of the covenant with Israel, whose voice then shook the earth, but now he hath promised, saying, yet once more I shake not the earth only, but also heaven. Well, it's not a direct quote, but it's a quote from Haggai chapter 2, verse 6, which we just read a few minutes ago. He says, there was a shaking of the earth. There was a literal shaking of the earth that took place when God gave his covenant to Israel. But he said, there's another covenant. There's a new covenant that is soon to come. And there's going to be a shaking before that covenant is established. There is to be a later shaking, a shaking once more, he says. And the phrase once more really means once for all. In fact, that's the way the Diaglot renders that phrase. And then he goes on and tells us a little bit more than what Haggai told us. He says in verse 27, and this word yet once more, or once for all, signifies the removing of those things that are shaken. Okay, so the things that are shaken, Paul says, they're going to be removed. As of things that are made. In other words, things that are human made, human organizations. They're going to be shaken, they're going to be removed. That those things which cannot be shaken may remain. What are the things, or what is the thing, that cannot be shaken? Well, Paul answers that question. And this is one of those verses, verse 28, where we have this word, wherefore, or as Brother Tim said this morning, therefore. It's another one of those connecting words. And in verse 28, the Apostle Paul tells us what can't be moved, what can't be shaken. And then he tells us, gives us one of the instructions as to what we should be doing about this. He says, wherefore we, receiving a kingdom which cannot be moved or cannot be shaken. That's the spiritual temple that we're all engaged in building. That spiritual temple, if built properly, cannot, will not be shaken. It will stand forever. Wherefore, we receiving a kingdom which cannot be moved, then he tells us, part of our responsibility in making this happen in our own individual lives. He says, let us have grace whereby we may serve God acceptably. There's service, there's work, with reverence and godly fear. Grace, serving God, reverence, and godly fear. Those are is just a summation, perhaps, of the responsibilities that we have in building our spiritual temple in order that it cannot be shaken or moved. And, you know, it is so beautiful that Paul here picks up just on these few words from the book of Haggai, who was talking about the building of that second temple. And yet the real lesson is for us who are building a spiritual temple. Because then Haggai goes on, and he, you know, after he prophesies about the shaking, he then says, well, he talks about the desire of all nations coming in verse 6, Haggai 2:6. And I will fill, verse 7, and I will fill this house with glory, saith the Lord of hosts. It's the new, the spiritual temple, that temple of the living God, the centerpiece of the new Jerusalem, which is to bless all the families of the earth. He says, I will fill that house with glory. And you remember that question that God asked the Israelites after, when they built this second temple. You know, how do you see this temple? How do you view this temple compared to Solomon's? And they perhaps didn't think it was so great. Well, this house, Haggai says, this house will be filled with glory. And he says in verse 9, the glory of this latter house, the new Jerusalem, the new temple, the spiritual temple, the glory of this latter house shall be greater than of the former. Any of the former, whether it's Solomon's, Zerubbabel's, Herod's, the glory of this latter house will be greater than of the former. And in this place will I give peace, saith the Lord of hosts. And you know, one of the beautiful things about this completed picture of God's house is that it not only includes his spiritual temple, his son, Jesus, and his church, but there's also an earthly aspect to this house. You remember in Revelation 21:3, speaking of the kingdom and the blessings that will come, the Apostle John says, behold, the tabernacle, or the habitation of God, will be with men. And he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and God himself shall be with them and be their God. You know, Adam, in his perfection, he was an earthly temple of God. And he brought glory to the name of God in that perfection. And what a blessing it will be that at the end of the kingdom, mankind, having been brought back to perfection through the various experiences, first with sin and then with righteousness, they too will become, in a sense, earthly temples of God, dwelling places of God's character. What a glorious outcome this is. What a glorious house this will be, the heavenly and the earthly, bringing honor and praise to the Creator. And as the last phrase of that ninth verse of Haggai 2 says, in this place I will give peace. And what a fitting conclusion this is to that prophecy. Everything will then be at peace. Everything will be at one. We talk about at one-ment. Everything will be at one, both in heaven and in earth. And so, let's just summarize with five lessons, because that's what we really want to take from this, is the lessons we can use to victoriously complete this temple building work. Lesson one, Let us remember that our individual temple building is the most important work of our consecrated walk. Lesson number two, let us consider our ways. Let us, if we find our temple building work lacking in some way, let us do as was counseled to the Israelites. Consider our ways, and that we might return to that work with renewed zeal and renewed vigor and determination to complete it. Lesson number three, in our temple building, in our life as spirit-begotten new creatures, let us be encouraged to be strong and to work and to remember that God is always with us. You know, let us focus on this temple building as a positive thing, not as a drudgery, not as something wearisome, but as something positive. Let us be incited to continue in this work. Lesson number four, let's remember that the shaking work is not our work. That's the Lord's. And so as such, our mental vision, even though we see the shaking, we watch it, we want to examine the scriptures and see how things are being fulfilled, but it's not the focal point of our mental vision. The shaking is a means to a glorious end, but it's not an end in itself. Shakings shouldn't surprise us. They shouldn't discourage us. They shouldn't scare us. They should not cause us to question God, nor should they cause us to stop working for the Lord. Because remember, our temple, the work that we are to be engaged in, if built properly, cannot be shaken. And finally, the last lesson, let us always remember, let us always look at our own experiences and the experiences all around us in the world. Let us look at these through the prism of God's plan. That His plan, just as was prophesied by Haggai, will have a glorious outcome. And God's house, both heavenly and earthly, will far surpass any glory that fallen man could ever hope to achieve. And so, as Haggai said, the desire of all nations and all people will come. God's house will be forever filled with glory. And may we then be faithful as temple builders of our Christian character, so that we might have a place as a pillar in the temple of our God. May the Lord add His blessing.